It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning January 26, 2024. Forget the ritual excitement the New Hampshire primary stirred up in our country's political classes and its media, of course, all of which ended with a dull thud of predictability. For the rest of the world, there is no doubt what the week's absolute biggest story has really been, one that has massive importance for the world's future. A whole world away from our country's political wrangling, we now finally have, after decades of Herculean scientific efforts to get here, a reliable vaccine against malaria. Malaria has been claiming human lives at a rate of more than 500,000 people dying every year worldwide. The highest proportion of them, a stunning 80%, being children under the age of 5. A new vaccine rollout started this week in the West African country of Cameroon, which is high among the nations most seriously burdened with malaria. Mass and, by design, routine injections are now going into the upper arms of very young infants. The very first recipient, highly symbolic and, of course, much photographed, was an 8-month-old girl called Danielle, who seemed surprisingly happy at being jabbed and getting a lot of media attention. But it has to be said, if you wanted information about this welcome World Health breakthrough, and you're a reader, listener, watcher in this vastly, inwardly swirling vortex of the American media, you would have to look hard for this news. Let me provide some elements of background you likely missed. The anti-parasite compound that's at the core of the vaccine, called RTS-S, has been developed since the 1990s by researchers in Britain. This new mass vaccination program will sensibly enough be incorporated into all the childhood immunizations against measles, diphtheria, tetanus, and so on, that are standard during kids' early years. 20 other countries aim to roll out the program this year, among them Liberia, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Sierra Leone. So says the Global Alliance Gavi. The acronym is the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. Perhaps to no one's surprise who takes an interest in these vital matters, the allies who make up this specialized body include the leading United Nations agency involved, the World Health Organization, and, with its deep financial pockets, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's been a strong global emphasis placed on malaria ever since the former, now dead and much lamented, UN Secretary-General Kofi Annan first created the three-pronged Global Fund for AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. In the years that followed, there were the beginnings of a reduction in malaria cases and deaths worldwide until COVID interrupted that improvement. Climate change, too, has had its adverse effect. It's often introducing the disease to new areas where the populations and health systems previously had somewhat less exposure. Now, though, hopes are riding high on this new routinizing, to coin a phrase, of the malaria vaccine. RTSS, of course, is not a replacement for other anti-malaria measures, which will inevitably and rightly continue, like the basic measure of insecticide-treated mosquito nets to ward off the parasite-carrying insects, or the ongoing use of antimalarial pills as a prophylactic. But obviously, the early delivery in childhood of a one-shot vaccine, actually four shots, but all given before a child reaches 18 months of age, will carry huge advantages. The mass programmatic use of this vaccine is the key, of course, which makes the rollout that began on Monday with Cameroon's baby Danielle so very significant. And here at home, there was something worth recalling about the New Hampshire primary. There occurred a binge of fact-checking in the mainstream press. The degree of duplication across many media platforms was somewhat unusual, concentrated as it was on one specific instance of something certainly in need of checking. You'll know all about it, I'm sure. It involved, I'm afraid to say, once again, Donald Trump. Or Donald J. Trump, as my hometown newspaper, the New York Times, keeps insisting he should be called, as if there were some other Donald Trump in the news that we might mistake for Donald J. Well, he made a speech. Of course, Donald Trump made a speech, pretty much the same one as always during the primary campaigning. But in this speech, he got a bit off track. He evidently confused his opponent in the GOP nomination stakes, Nikki Haley, with the former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, his nemesis often enough during his time in the Oval Office. He was talking about the January 6th assault on the United States Capitol in 2021, and he found fault with Haley for her failure to protect the building. Yes, you heard right. He said, and I quote verbatim his exact words for good reason, Nikki Haley is in charge of security. We offered her 10,000 people, soldiers, National Guard, whatever they want. They turned it down. He was so clearly talking about Nancy Pelosi. Actually, she wasn't in charge of security for the Capitol any more than Nikki Haley was, but you might imagine that the Speaker of the House could have had some say in security for the chamber where she controlled all proceedings. Nikki Haley, though, the woman he named, could needless to say never have had any such role. At the time, Haley was, as we say in our trade, between jobs, didn't occupy any governmental office at all. She had long since resigned as Trump's ambassador to the UN and was just starting her own political action committee with, of course, an eye to herself making a 2024 run for the presidency, as we've seen. In Trump's brain, though, it's entirely feasible he should mix up Haley and Pelosi. They're both women, after all, and in contention with him, though he hasn't, at least hasn't yet, called either of them such a nasty woman, the way he described his 2020 opponent, former Secretary of State and Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. But while rambling on last week in Concord, New Hampshire, he made further references to Haley instead of Pelosi, not twice, but four times. However, what is perhaps more interesting than Trump's evidently confused thinking is how it came to be reported. As the editor of the New Republic, Michael Tomasky, has pointed out, Trump's confusion gained the active engagement of reporters only after Haley herself drew attention to the mix-up or mix-ups. And she made hay with them, naturally enough. She questioned if the old man was mentally fit for office again. "I think he's declining," she told CBS News. It took Trump's evident cognitive decline being out there, as they say in newsrooms, and thus the subject of general political chatter, before the many fact-checkers then piled in on the subject and had their own field day. It cannot count as self-starting journalistic enterprise, I would say. And according to Tomasky in his New Republic opinion column, the field day they had was not as big a field day as if the shoe had been on another foot. And of course I mean President Biden's foot and his own capacity for foot-in-mouth moments. Imagine, Tomasky asked, how huge a deal would have been made in the media, especially among Trump's slavish right-wing media legions, if Joe Biden had similarly misidentified a former member of his own cabinet. For the sake of example, he chose Marty Walsh, Biden's Labour secretary, for a good stretch of time. And, hypothetically, the editor pictured Walsh being singled out for chastisement by Biden for doing something disappointing that Walsh simply hadn't done, though someone else had, and Biden was mistaking the two individuals. Reporters, said Tomasky, would be, and I quote, shoving microphones in the faces of Democrats all across the country, from senators to dog catchers, asking about Biden's mental state. It would be a four-day story, maybe more. Columnists, including several liberal ones, would be demanding that Biden stand down. I've a feeling that this hypothetical comparison is a tad exaggerated, but not that much. It is disturbing, and in this I'm totally with Tomasky, that across the media in general, the task of calling out Trump on all his lies and increasingly now his untethered mental hold on reality, has become a same old, tiresome, low-priority job for reporters. That won't do in this crucial election year. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.